All right, welcome to Highly Questionable. It's not Culture Wednesday here, but we still got Dominique Foxworth. Izzy Gutierrez, what's going on? You ready to get this started?
Let's do it.
I still haven't figured out what to say.
I mean, neither. That was terrible.
Does expansion make sense for the NBA?
All right, so the NBA is taking bids from cities on awarding a new team. Not really bids from cities, but bids from rich people, and it's probably going to cost some rich person about $2.5 billion a year if he wants to get a brand new NBA franchise. And this is great for NBA owners because they get to split the fees on the $2.5 billion, and some of these dudes need some cash because, you know, pandemic, all of this stuff, right? But is this good for the NBA? Like, go take a look at the map. There really aren't that many cities that the NBA needs to be in. In fact, there's a lot of cities the NBA is already in that it shouldn't be in. So going back to Seattle, a top 15 market, that would make sense. Going into Las Vegas, where they already got the hockey team, not every city can support a hockey team and a basketball team. I don't think that's one of them. I don't think there are that many places left for the league to go, but it'll get $5 billion in the pockets of the owners.
Well, that's what's so interesting about this to me, Bo, is because, you know, normally you think expansion, you think your league is flourishing. You think, oh, I'm going to get a couple another cities and really grow my league. And here what you're talking about is this is sort of a life raft for the league because they need money. They need this $5 billion and these owners need all this. So it just makes you think, okay, is that really going to thrive? And I think when you look at what Glenn Taylor is doing in Minnesota and selling that franchise, if he can only get a bid of about $1.5 billion, doesn't sound like a lot compared to 2.5, but that is a lot, right? The question is if somebody wants to keep them in Minnesota. So if you're looking at the Minnesota franchise and saying, okay, yeah, I'll buy them, but I'm going to move them to another city, then yeah, you're probably looking at Seattle or Las Vegas in that scenario. So until you find out what happens in Minnesota, you can't really put a price on those other franchises yet. Are these franchise values going up or are they dropping down because of, you know, pandemic? And so I think there's just this really gray area right now with the league. And if they get away, if they find a way to put a franchise in Seattle and put a franchise in Las Vegas and line these owners' pockets, it's going to be the type of life raft that they're going to need, the type of move that the league needs. Because again, we saw things going this way. All of a sudden, you're talking about a $5 billion boost. That'll be quite the get.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a terribly short-sighted money grab because right now times are tough. You're supposed to expand when people want more. This is not a situation where it feels like people want more NBA. It feels like, if anything, I've really enjoyed the dispersion of talent around the league. I'm not sure that I want it even dispersed even further. Like, from a standpoint of watching the games, I like what we got right now. We got some powerful teams. We got some ambiguity on who's going to win the championship. I'm not sure I need some more bottom-of-the-league teams, which is what these expansion teams are going to be. And I think in the long run, obviously, these franchise values will go up. Getting in on professional sports doesn't seem like a bad investment, but expanding the number of teams does seem like it devalues the investment that these guys already have. And I guess that's what the money up front is for. But this seems like what you do when you can't quite get everything you have and you want to go into layaway, which is what these not as rich owners are doing. They're trying to get into some sort of same day check cashing scheme so they can get some money in their pocket, which never, ever pans out well, especially when you don't have to. These guys who need some money, call one of the guys who have money. Call Ballmer and tell him to loan you a couple hundred million for a few months, because that will be better for the long-term health of this league and for the long-term value of the franchises that these people own.
Yeah, let me ask y'all a question, man. I mean, as this has happened, I was thinking about this because I saw Las Vegas come up. Am I the only person a little bit surprised that Las Vegas wants to, like, have NBA games there again, right? The last time they had a big NBA game there, you know, it was a thing.
I mean, it was really rough for football players, if you remember correctly. As a football player who I think that was, whatever, it was early in my career, I was there, and I remember getting home the next morning after going out and just seeing so many football players named, and I was like, I thought this was an NBA event. Like, it seemed like half the NFL was out there getting arrested.
That's the one side where the NBA sort of is going to have the automatic cheerleaders, right? Seattle, everybody wants an NBA team back in Seattle, and Las Vegas. We've got the Raiders there. Why not the NBA team? You want to create these franchises in these cities that are sort of destinations, but is Vegas too much of a destination? I don't know. I'd hate to coach that team. That's all I'm saying.
Now, here's what we need, though. They need to have it where, like, on a Friday night, they got the hockey game, and on a Saturday night, they got the basketball game. It would be kind of like in Atlanta when they had the Garth Brooks concert and the Outkast concert in the same area on the same night. I want to see America's and Canada's come together.
Are the Dolphins smart to go all in on Tua?
All right, Dolphins GM Chris Greer says they are happy with the quarterback they have. They are happy with the development of Tua Tagovailoa after the half season of football that they saw him play. Now, this comes up as a question because they have the number three pick in the draft. So if they wanted to go get another quarterback, they could go get another quarterback. The whole reason, though, that we entertain this discussion is because the Arizona Cardinals did this. They drafted Josh Rosen 1 year. He was not good. They went and then drafted Kyler Murray the next year. But that was about going all in on this crazy Cliff Kingsbury experiment that they had, is that if they were going to get the failed coach from Texas Tech just for his offense, then they might as well lean all the way in on his offense. That was a bit of a special case. Tua does not appear to be a guy, based on what we've seen, to make you immediately bail, especially when at the three, there's no real sure thing quarterback for them to take. They got a chance to build a juggernaut there. They don't need to stack up quarterbacks.
Yeah, I agree with you mostly, but if you can get a type of quarterback that changed your franchise, that's something different. The problem is none of us know if those guys are who they are. Like Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, they went after 10. Like, we're looking at the best quarterback that we ever seen. So I would understand getting behind that logic if you knew that you were going to get a sure thing, but no one ever knows for a sure thing. And I think it's also important to point out that they have 4 first round picks in the next 2 seasons. So, I mean, it's possible they could pack that and move up and get Trevor Lawrence. So it's not out of the question that they could make a decision right here. I don't think Tua has shown that he is 100% the guy, but nothing about what I've seen from these other quarterbacks, and I'd include Trevor Lawrence in that too. He hasn't shown up in big games necessarily the way that we expect him to. Nothing about what we've seen from these other quarterbacks say it's time to throw in the towel and let's figure out what these guys can do. Everybody that's in the draft right now is just as promising, I think, as Tua has been so far. Part of the problem is some guys walk in the league and they are awesome on day one, and we start to expect the rest of the guys to do that. That's just not how it works. Some guys need a little maturation, especially if you're coming off having your hips shattered.
Guys, I feel like a crazy person down here. I feel like the only person who's actually watched these games. First of all, we gave Ryan Tannehill so many years, and we just basically said, I don't know, he might be good. With Tua, we're giving up on him in like 8 games. It's absolutely ridiculous, especially when you consider the circumstances. Chan Gailey was not the offensive coordinator for him. You look at those skill position players and say he doesn't have anybody. He's got a couple guys. He's got just Gesicki at the tight end, and he's got Devontae Parker. He's gotten both of those guys big games this year, multiple big games this year. His accuracy is there. His arm strength is good enough. The offense was not suited for him. They rolled out a little bit to the left early on, didn't really do that much. His biggest issue is his height. Can't really see over the line. Go study the New Orleans Saints offense. Go study Russell Wilson's offense. Find a way to get around that situation, and you have got a franchise quarterback. Will he be the best quarterback in the league? I don't know. He'll definitely, and I'm going to tell you this, I don't really predict this way, he'll definitely be top 10 in the league at some point. He's a very good quarterback. Stop complaining about it.
Yo, that's emphatic, emphatic. But like you mentioned Chan Gailey, and can we talk about this for a second? This man came out of retirement just so he could work with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now, I know that you can't try to figure out what it is that motivates other people, but damn, if I had decided I don't want to work no more, that's what brings you joy?
Up next on HQ.
I don't want to tell nobody how to produce their television show, but on that game on Sunday night, they were showing us close-ups of Alex Smith's leg as he was dropping back. And I don't know which one of y'all came up with that idea in that meeting, but I am here to speak to you as a viewer. Don't do that no more, man. That did not make this game pleasant at all.
Highly Questionable is presented by Crown Royal Regal Apple. Great taste is great taste is great taste. Drink responsibly. Part of Happy Hour. Is Bruce Arians right to worry about Washington because they're no longer saddled with Dwayne Haskins?
All right, now here's what Bruce Arians had to say. He said that Washington isn't really a 7-9 team. They're a 4-1 team with Alex Smith, and basically said that all the losing was the fault of Dwayne Haskins, and Haskins isn't playing. So I guess this is his way of trying to say that Washington is a better team than their record indicates. I get where he's coming from on that. I understand why he would say that. However, okay, we good? Safe space, all of this.
You're good.
Alex Smith is going to win comeback player of the year just because he came back. Like, it's not as though he has been good this year, right? It is amazing that he has been able to come back and play. And we watch him and we cringe every time he gets hit because we're so worried that something is going to happen to him, which is not really optimal for football success. But in terms of actual results from Alex Smith at quarterback, they really haven't been there. He has been better than Dwayne Haskins, but that's not saying very much. So if he's trying to say, Arians, that they're like a 4-1 team, which would stretch out to like a 12-4 team or a 13-3 team for a whole year because of Alex Smith, no, that ain't what this is.
Yeah, they were trying to lose last week to a team that was literally trying to lose. So Washington could not beat the Eagles. The Eagles had to beat themselves. So I think Washington's front four is on defense is impressive. That defense is very good, particularly later in games. But let's not be pretending like that offense is anything special. Alex Smith is a game manager. He becomes worse than that when he starts turning the ball over, which is what he's been doing lately. Maybe Taylor Heinicke gives them a little bit better a chance, but I noticed that he didn't say we're going up against Taylor Heinicke. No one's afraid of that, and no one's afraid of Alex Smith either, unfortunately. He deserves comeback player of the year, just like you said, because he came back. But he ain't balling out there, and it's not a team that has a whole lot of confidence in their offense. That is a team that still will be looking for a quarterback next year and in the near future.
You know, I was thankful kind of quietly about Doug Peterson's decision there because I wanted the Washington football team to make the playoffs because Chase Young is the one player from that entire division that I actually wanted to see. But the one player that I'd never want to see, it's so cringeworthy and it just makes me, just gives me the chills every time, is watching Alex Smith play. And so, I haven't even watched him that much. Like, I have a hard time watching him play because of his leg. But in this situation with Ron Rivera, look, if he's going to Steve Spurrier this thing and go the two quarterback system, honestly, it's probably the best way to do a one game shock value type of, you know, maybe at least get a half where you're just adjusting to that. At least Tampa is, you're just adjusting to that. And then they have their chance in that second half, because I mean, nobody even knows what the skill set of Taylor Heinicke is. Do you, Dominique? I mean, don't tell me you do. You don't.
Yeah, let's all throw something out here, too. Like, I don't want to tell nobody how to produce their television show, but on that game on Sunday night, they were showing us close-ups of Alex Smith's leg as he was dropping back. And I don't know which one of y'all came up with that idea in that meeting, but I am here to speak to you as a viewer. Don't do that no more, man. That did not make this game pleasant at all. We are trying not to think about that.
The NFL is not allowing Kevin Stefanski to coach electronically, but should they?
All right, so Kevin Stefanski, as you may have heard, caught COVID, can't really have him around, he can't be coaching the team. So this means that in their first playoff game since January of 2003, the Cleveland Browns will be without their head coach. It would be kind of nifty, though, when you think about it, if he could sit there at the house and send things in for the game. Once Steve Spurrier was suspended for a game when he was at Duke, and he sent a runner in a golf cart back and forth with his instructions as he was watching it on television. I mean, it would be kind of funny for us if it happened, but I bet it would be wild annoying to the actual coaches on the Browns who were there, right? There's a reason why they're not at home. There's an advantage to actually being in the stadium.
Yo, do you guys remember, and I don't know if you were big Arrested Development fans, but one of the episodes where the dad had a surrogate, it was another human being, and it just had a microphone and a camera, and he would, and you, can you imagine this? Stefanski's face on an iPad and just another body. Stefanski just tells him, hey, turn left, turn right, and it's his face on the iPad on the sideline. What's wrong with that? He can't be looking at anything else. He can't get any other information from anything else because you can see his face the entire time. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, I feel like I probably shouldn't take this question seriously, but I'm going to. Like, I feel like it would be a disadvantage to Cleveland to have that situation. Like, the latency, the dropping of internet services, like, and the potential of the other team interfering with it. Like, I feel like being relying on that hackers. Level of technology will never work out. It will definitely get hacked. There'll be people trolling it.
The
it'll
Patriots get turned
into everything else. Hold on. You remember what the Browns did? If you remember that article about Browns and how dysfunctional Browns organization was at a certain point, there was something posted on some screens in their building that was inappropriate because they were following the wrong hashtag. I'm just imagining that that's the same thing that will pop up on Stefanski's face in the middle of the game. If any team can do it, it ain't the Browns.
Well, they haven't been in the playoffs so long. They deserve this. We need this from the Browns.
How about this? Why don't they do like when Sean Payton got suspended that year and they replaced Sean Payton with a big old banner on the wall of the facility that said his face and said, do your job. They just have a big old Stefanski sign that says, do your job.
While he's not doing his.
Highly Questionable is presented by Crown Royal Regal Apple. Great taste is great taste is great taste. Drink responsibly. Part of happy hour.
Do you question if this was Dylan Brooks' fault?
Dylan Brooks, who I have to admit, I'd be forgetting is in the NBA. He went to one of those teams where I can lose track of you. Sorry, Memphis. Anyway, let's get a look at this.
Making some highlight plays defensively. Dylan Brooks.
That was on LeBron.
Hold on. Off me!
And then
he looked at him? Left hand on it, but he didn't. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, though, right? Like, I don't mean to be that guy, but I am going to be that guy. Would nobody do that to Mike? I'm just telling you, like, that move right there at the end, by the time he tried to do that to Mike, somebody would have bear hugged him and been like, no, young man, come this way.
It's involuntary. When you have a big play like that, it's involuntary. You can't control it. I'm sure we go through the Mike footage and if somebody had a confrontation with Mike, they celebrated in that moment.
But you saw what he did, right? You saw what LeBron answered or how he answered. I mean, this is about as good as it gets.
I mean,
he gave it to him. Nope. Watch the celebration. You missed the celebration. Watch it on this one. That's two in a row. Too small. Too small.
I feel you on that, but you're not going to play too small while you taking a fadeaway jumper. Like, that dude muscled you to the ground, and your response is to fall backwards and shoot a 17-footer?
The whole second half of MJ's career was fadeaway jumpers, but all of a sudden, that's not okay?
I'm just saying that if the dude put you on the ground, the response in kind is to put him on the ground.
Yeah, you got it, though.
Do you question this ref's reaction?
All right, so we are going out to Texas high school basketball. Ah, you didn't see that coming. Now, the guy that we're going to see here apparently is a lightly regarded football recruit. He's a wide receiver, and he has one offer, but he also has a mullet. But the person who told me he has a mullet is white, so I don't know if he has a mullet or he has a shag. Find out now. No, that's a mullet.
Oh. That is a mullet. That is also a very weak backboard.
There we go.
I mean,
crashed it, and the ref can't believe it.
I mean, would you? Look at that team. I wouldn't believe it either. This looks like the little private school that maybe doesn't really get too many dunks, and that's why the backboard was so weak, and it fractured as soon as they got that shocking dunk from the big-time wide receiver recruit who's playing basketball.
That ref is so glad that there were witnesses, because previous to the era of video, there's no way he would have been explained to his friends. I'm telling you, he had one of them haircuts that was short front, long in the back, broke dog. I swear.
I just love the idea that the backboard wasn't even ready for that dunk. And also, how many people right now on their phone Googling shag? I know this qualifies Bomani as a two America situation. Not very many people know what the black mullet looks like. And not too many people understand that the mullet is just a white shag.
Yeah, I'm just telling you, if that was in the Dallas area, they are very familiar with shags. They just don't know what they called, because in Dallas, they do that.
They still doing that out there. They didn't realize that ain't popping no more.
Tonight at 10 p.m., Clippers and Warriors.
All right, the Warriors back to looking like an NBA franchise as Draymond Green came back. They're 2-1 since then. We got Paul George here, though, and he got into a scuffle with Devin Booker. He put up 39 on him, and here he is talking about it after the fact about cats trying him since the bubble.
I don't know, man. I had a tough year last year. People think it's sweet, man. People think it's sweet because I was down. I didn't hear none of this my 10 years in the league, but last year, people living on that last year. I got to answer to that. You know, I got to answer to that. I got to be ready for that. And I'm ready to compete. I'm back.
Yo, I've never heard somebody just flat out say, yeah, these dudes have been disrespecting me since I came up short. Like, I've never heard anybody talk about that. Izzy, you intrigued?
Well, first, we just skipped over that 7:30 game on ESPN Celtics Heat, which yours truly will be helping out on the call. So let's just remember that one. Secondarily, I'm intrigued because I'm team PG on this one. He has been a very good player. He has, you know, that first full season in Oklahoma City where he was nearly an MVP candidate, or he was an MVP candidate for the first half of the season, basically. He is still a great player and had one bad season, and he's had a couple of bad playoffs. But if you're going to go ahead and just own up to it and say, yeah, they're trying me, I'm going to go ahead and make this season about proving myself, then go ahead. I want to see that. So I don't know if he can do it or not, but I'm all for it. Go PG.
I mean, when guys come out and talk about mental health, because this is partially what that's about, we all say how brave they are. And then some people are like, it's not that brave. We just all come around them and celebrate. This is why it's brave, because what you're either brave or stupid, what you are doing is giving ammunition to your opponent. And I've never played an NBA game, but I do know in football that there are no holds barred. Things that come up on the field and people trying to get into your head or insult you go all the way down to the things that you are doing off the field. Maybe relationships that you have had. Maybe if you got arrested. Like, I've heard all of this stuff come up in game. So Paul George is, I'm sure, hearing it on the court, and he's hearing the same thing that them eggs was saying to him on Twitter. And that's a tough thing probably to deal with, but it makes it so rewarding when you can drop nearly 40 on somebody.
I can only imagine what Chris Paul was saying to him in that very game.
All right, that is it. I was going to tell you where to find Izzy tonight, but he already told you where he's going to be because he just couldn't wait for his pub. Check out Dominique Foxworth at theundefeated.com.